Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and before we get into today's show, I would just like to talk to you a little bit about Tech Ed. Tech Ed is coming up June 3rd to 6th in New Orleans and 26th to 28th, if I'm not mistaken, in Europe. So go to www.msteched.com, register for the event, either here or in Europe. I will be in New Orleans, so if you go there, come by and check me out. You can go to the Channel 9 site, go to events, go to Tech Ed, and then for both North America and Europe, you can see what sessions there are. So you could come down here and look at all the sessions in the developer tools track, come down, do a filter here, and you can check out what sessions are being given. You can search for speakers. So if we come down here and highlight me, then my talk should show up. There it is, Design Guidance for Windows Store Line of Business Apps on June 5th, 5 to 6:15. Hope to see you guys there. And of course, you can do the same thing for Europe. I will not be in Europe, unfortunately. I'm going to Build. So if you go to Build, come by and see me. So here's Tech Ed Europe as well. So I just wanted to mention that. It's not too late to sign up for Tech Ed. Hope to see you guys there. And with that, the advertisements are over, and we get to the meat of why we're here, to talk about Prism for Windows Runtime. And my guests are Francis Chung. Hi, Francis.
Hi.
Blaine Wasdell. Hi, Blaine.
Hello. How are you?
And you guys are here to talk about Prism.
Yes.
There was a previous or a current version of Prism for .NET 4, and now we've got Prism for the Windows Runtime. So
which
begs the question, what is Prism? What is it? Why was it invented? What problems does it solve? Who gets to use it? Etc.
Absolutely. Well, let me give that to Blaine.
Okay. So the original Prism, both Francis and I worked on, and it was really about two main scenarios. One is creating composite apps in either WPF or Silverlight. Mm-hmm. The other part of it was...
Explain that, composite apps.
So if you think of a call center application where you have lots of back-end data stores that you're retrieving data from, but yet you want to appear on the screen to look as if it's one application.
Okay.
So, again, call center is a very common one. So that was the first part. The other part of the scenario was creating apps that are maintainable and testable. So when we started out with Prism, those are the two major focuses of the project itself. It's been out since, actually quite a while now, since 2008, I think, was the first release. And there's still lots of people that are out there using Prism. It's been very successful. Then the other question you had is, well, what is Prism for Windows Runtime?
Right.
And we have lots of customers saying, hey, we love Prism. Can you please take it to Windows 8?
Can you please port it?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. It was really port it. Can you just take all of it as is? And Francis and I looked at it and said, you know, a number of things that were there for Prism are different for Windows Store and Windows Store apps. So it didn't make a sense. It didn't make sense to completely port it. Although there definitely are parts of Prism that came forward.
There's a lot of reuse.
Correct.
If you will.
Correct.
Okay.
So
good, because that's what we tell customers who are moving from WPF, say, to Windows 8. That it's not a port. It's not a migration. There's a lot of reuse. A lot of the XAML you can reuse. A lot of the code you can reuse. So you guys, no doubt, found the same thing.
Yeah.
And when I say you guys, that you guys are part of Patterns and Practices.
That's correct.
So let's back up just 1 second and tell us what Patterns and Practices is, the Patterns and Practices group.
We're a group within DevDiv that concentrates on providing guidance.
Mm-hmm.
So our customers are mainly enterprise line of business customers who want to know how to build their applications on the platform being WPF, Azure, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was Windows Store apps, but prior to Windows Store apps, of course, Blaine mentioned that we built Prism on WPF and then to Silverlight and then onto Windows Phone.
Okay, cool. And the Patterns and Practices site where people can get everything from is, what's the
just microsoft.com/practices.
Practices, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a link from there to our CodePlex site for this for this project.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm an enterprise developer, been writing line of business apps in WPF. I move over to Windows Store and I figured out, you know, I can reuse my XAML, my C# or VB or whatever. Why would I need something like Prism? What does it help me do?
Well, Prism really helps answer the question, how do you build a business quality, enterprise style, land business application on Windows Store, right? We've shown how to do that on WPF and on Silverlight, but if you want to build something that's really highly testable, highly maintainable, it's not really quite clear. It's a relatively new platform, so we're still learning how to build these apps. So what we did is we built an app, we call it the AdventureWorks Shopper, and we built this app really demonstrating all the techniques that we've learned so far. For example, how to make them really maintainable and testable. That really biggest question, do you use a separated presentation pattern like MVVM or MVP or something like that to really make these things testable and maintainable? We took all that knowledge and we baked them into this one app. And after we built the app, we realized that there are a lot of things that we can harvest and make reusable to a lot of people. So the app, we'll show you in a minute, is a really well-tested app. We have a very, very high-caliber test team that really banged on this, looked at every line of code, looked at it in terms of performance, in terms of accessibility, narrator support, looked at it from a lot of different angles. So if you want to take a look at an example of a really well-tested app on Windows Store, this is an example. But we've also harvested out of that app a lot of reusable components. For example, the event aggregator that you may be familiar with in Prism, we pulled that forward because we found a good use for it in this app, so we brought it over. Also, commanding support that you probably are familiar with in WPF, we brought that over. In terms of the delegate command we wrote for Prism, we brought that over because it's just a really easy way to create commands. So from that, shall we dive into the demo?
Yeah.
Sure. All right.
Let's see here. All right, so here we have AdventureWorks. Francis mentioned before AdventureWorks Shopper, and many of you probably remember the old AdventureWorks sample from SQL Server. We decided to continue on that theme, and the big reason was we wanted to focus on the area of forms over data, and we felt that the ability to check out where I have to enter shipping, billing information, payment information, that was a good place we could do that. Additionally, we wanted to show what Windows 8 is good at, which is content, right? So, I mean, I can have a product information right here, and if you're familiar with things like semantic zoom, we have all of that in the application itself, or, we can, put something into Snap, as Francis mentioned also, the app itself will support accessibility. So it is we've done pseudo localization. So we've done a number of things that if you were building this app for real, you'd want to look at. The other thing we can do is we can say, okay, we got a bike, we got a number of bikes. And the UX was another area that we really had to focus on. How do you take categories, subcategories, and display them in Windows 8? So, this is what we came up with after working with the UX team to do that. Now, I just added something to the cart. If I want, I can add some more products to the cart. I can say, let's go checkout. At this point, I can do checkout, and as you can see, we have a very secure system because we hide the username and the password. Let's see, and let's go ahead and submit. So now I'm checked in, or logged in, and so I can start entering a name.
Yeah. As Blaine types, I'll explain a little bit about this page. This page is the checkout hub page. This is an example of a composite view. So you can see here, you've got one page, but it's got a shipping, billing, and payment sections, and those sections are being reused throughout the app, so you can later on edit your shipping or edit your payment independently. But also, we are also showing composite in that the view models or the business logic behind those views are also being coordinated. So for example, if they were to suspend and terminate the app right now and come back, the whole view model state would be persisted correctly.
Okay.
Which is a very important feature with Windows 8 apps. that needs to be supported.
You're saving that state when? When the user comes in, when each time the user types? Because you can't really do it in the suspend itself, right?
Right. Well, we actually navigate from, every time you navigate from the page, and the suspend event forces the navigation. And we capture all the state of the view model at that point. And then at the end of the suspension, we actually write it to disk.
Okay.
So and then if the operating system actually terminates, we've already saved it to disk.
Right.
So then, I went through it quickly as you two were talking, but I actually did terminate, started the app again, and as the app starts up, you can see it has all the same state that I had before. It even has my error message that I, the mistake.
So you're using the navigate from, and the suspend triggers the navigate from.
That's correct.
Ah, yep. Okay, cool.
Yep. That's correct.
The other thing, as you can see on the screen here.
Yeah, just to finish up on that, the beauty of that is you're not doing all the work at once.
Correct.
And you are capturing this intermediate state. Like the user has typed some information, the app shuts down. When the user starts the application back up, they'd like to see the information they were in the middle of typing.
Right.
Absolutely.
You grabbed that because the suspend causes the navigate from to fire.
Yep.
At that point, you just grab the state, including whatever's in any of the controls.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
This is temporary state. This is not trying to hit some sort of back-end service.
Right.
So we're not persisting the shipping address at this point. For example, it's not valid at this point. You can see a validation error. So we need to capture it so that the user doesn't lose their data that they worked so hard to type in.
Right.
But we don't want to take the time to hit a back-end service.
Right, right.
Yep. The other thing you can see here is there is a validation error, and that's another area we worked on both from a UX perspective as well as a code perspective. How do you show errors? Mm-hmm. And how do you, from a code perspective, get the errors to display? And so that's an area Francis and the dev team worked a long time on. All right, let's change this.
Right. To dive deeper in that, the controls that are available in Windows Store apps don't provide the same level of error validation support that you'd expect in WPF and Silverlight. So we had to find some ways to augment what we have available to make these controls light up, as you see here, as well as the messaging right below that.
Right.
I want to do some. Here we go. Submit, and you can see my form is still not valid, so let's go fix these quickly. And value. There we go. What do I have here? Do I not have enough?
For a name.
Oh, name.
Yeah, help us.
Oh, what if you change your name to all numbers? Then the app won't work.
Why is it?
Yeah, we're not expecting
my name
numbers
in
the
name. I need 072. And here we actually demonstrated that went to the back end service and came back and validated and said, oh, Washington and that zip code are not valid together.
Right. And that had to be validated on the server. All the rest of the validation you've seen here don't hit a service in order to be validated.
Right.
Just check for regular expression validation as well as required field, that kind of stuff.
So that's all done asynchronously. That one was done asynchronously, where the others are done synchronously.
Okay.
Okay. So now I'm on my payment, and from here I can submit, I can change the payment. You know, we have search capabilities. Again, there's a number of things we have here.
So when you say that checks the back-end service, is that back-end service literally a service running on this computer, or do you literally stand up a service?
So right now, for the ability to have a good F5 experience when they download the sample, it is literally on this machine localhost.
Okay.
But we're using web API, and so it can easily go in the cloud.
Okay.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, our test team tests it in Azure.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, our performance testing was all done
with our back end
in Azure itself.
Cool.
Right. All right. So that's a demo of the app. Shall we talk a little bit more about the framework that we built?
Yeah.
That came out of this?
Yep.
I'll let you.
Right. So one thing that we realized was that there's a lot of things that people wanted or expect it in a framework, or expect it from Prism in this world, in the Windows Store apps world. And so we had to learn what people are used to and what people want to see. For example, one thing that was very common is convention over configuration. If you look at frameworks like MVVM Lite and Kelburn Micro, heavily convention-based. So for people who are really used to that, it's really easy to get up and running really quickly. So we saw the need, but we also heard from a lot of people who didn't really like that. We heard a lot of people who like the explicit nature of being able to write in code and see how things are wired up. So we need to balance that. So can I show you what we did to get
absolutely.
Started? All right. So in order to create a Windows Store app based upon our guidance, first, let's go ahead and create a new project.
Oh, good, because this is going to answer the question I was going to ask you, which is, how hard is it to get started using
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. So let's start with the Windows Store app, and let's go ahead and create with a blank app. Create a blank app. Okay, let's just call it App 9 for right now. And next step would be to take a reference to our library. And we ship actually two different libraries. Mm-hmm. One that's Event Aggregator. So if you're interested in decoupled pub/sub type communication, the Event Aggregator is really useful for that. But for the rest of the framework, it's in a library called StoreApps.
Called?
Prism StoreApps.
Prism StoreApps, okay.
Okay. So now you can either download our code to get that library, or you can also get it from NuGet. So let's get it from NuGet for right now.
One thing as you're doing that, Francis, the Event Aggregator is now in a portable class library. So it can be reused from Windows Store, WPF, Silverlight. It can be used across all of those. So that is a new capability we added in this release.
Prism Store apps, there it is.
So currently we're in pre-release, but in a few weeks we'll be in release. And then it'll hopefully show up on the first page. So we'll go ahead and install that. All right. And now what you'll see here is a Microsoft Practices Prism.StoreApps reference. And let's go to the AppXAML CS. And you can see here we have the AppXAML CS. It's listening to the suspending event, and it's got a lot of hooks to the root frame. Mm-hmm. And what you see here is a lot of necessary but boilerplate code. So in order to write a proper Windows Store app, you'll need to put a lot of your custom business logic interspersed into this code, which is kind of error prone, especially if the template is updated or if you have junior developers go in and start changing, rearranging this code, bad things can happen. So we don't like to see a lot of business logic interspersed with this boilerplate code. So what we're going to do is we're going to change the app to, instead of derived from application, we're going to have it derived from MVVM app base. Okay? Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to remove everything in app base except for initialize component. Isn't that better? Much cleaner, isn't it? Basically, you don't have any of the boilerplate code. But we have something else that we needed to do here. What we're going to do is we're going to implement an abstract method called onLaunchApplication, which is really the information to tell the application where to start.
Okay.
Your typical navigate to whatever page, which was included in all that boilerplate code, but you'd have to hunt into that boilerplate code to find out what to change. So we don't like people to really mess with that because you can get it wrong. So here what I want to do is I want to navigate to a start page, for example. So I've got a navigation service. So if you take a look at what is available in the MVVM app base, we have a number of properties or services that we've already got pre-configured. For example, you can take a look at the navigation service. we have got a navigation service that's similar to the frame navigation. It's a little bit different. We like to navigate to string-based references, string-based, what do I call it, representations of an experience instead of a class of a view. Okay, so that's a little bit different, but we also provide a flyout service. Okay. So when you want to open flyouts, which is without this library, it's much harder. I'll show you how to do that using this library. It's much, much easier, as well as a session state service. And that is very similar to the suspension manager. This is a more testable version of the suspension manager. So we use this, but it's derived from or is related to the suspension manager. Okay. It's got basically the same functionality.
The other thing is this works really well with MVVM, yes. Where the templates that come out of the box work fairly well with more code behind style of app development. So it really is a preference from a developer if you want to use MVVM or if you prefer more of a code behind.
Okay.
So what I'm doing here is I'm navigating to a start page. And what we're going to do is we're going to use a convention to find that start page. So here in the app, I'm going to add a folder called Views. Again, that's a convention or a configuration. And I'm going to put a view in that folder, actually a page, and I'm going to call it.
So you're using blank pages instead of the basic pages.
You can use the basic pages.
Okay.
Just for
the basic pages
purchase.
Come with a lot of plumbing, including the plumbing to do state management.
They do.
So do you not need those if you're using Prism? You don't need all that plumbing?
That's a great question. The basic pages you see there do some plumbing. The state management is using Suspension Manager. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to switch that over to using something that's a little more testable. But the difference between what we show in our app versus what you see in those blank pages is that the blank pages give you XAML and some plumbing to allow you to save your state. Well, that's more view type state. We think of that as view state. For example, your scroll position would be a good example of your view state. That's nothing that's really business logic, right? Now, form data or maybe your selection, that's more something that you'd expect your business side to care about. So we want that to be in a piece of code that we call view model that's more testable. So your view, your XAML, and your code behind would be relatively simple and light. And your business logic is really going to be in a more a view model class. Right. And I'll dive into that more in a little bit.
Okay.
So we've got a start page here. Let's just make sure we landed on this page. So I'm just going to go in here and put a text block here.
So just for people that might not be familiar with it, which editor add-in, which editor plugin are you using?
I'm using ReSharper for a lot of my data entry. It just helps with my typing. Okay, so if you just hit start. Okay, where did I? This time?
We have that squiggly, yeah.
Oh, right. So after I've changed the base class for the app, I need to go to the XAML and do the same here.
Right.
Okay. Add the reference there and also down here. All right.
And did you add the convention in the XAML? Go ahead, no. You'll see.
I think they should work. So again, we're using the start. So we can see that using our MVVM app base to really bootstrap our application, we told it to navigate to the start experience. And the navigation service used the convention-based approach to look for the start page in the views folder.
Okay.
Now, that's not a very interesting app, however, because there's not much business logic. We'd expect there to be a class behind this that really provides the horsepower behind this page.
Right.
So let's show what that would look like. What I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in a view model. Are you familiar with view models?
Yep.
Okay. Well, view models, for people who aren't as familiar, is really important for people who care about testability. Probably not many people. Hopefully a lot of people.
Hopefully
a lot of people.
Yep.
Now, I'm asked about MVVM a lot, and it's really, really important. If you want high-quality, maintainable applications, you need to have testability. You don't have to use this pattern necessarily, but we have because we found it to be the pattern that's most used in the XAML stacks for testability. Go ahead and take the business logic out of your views and put them in a view model that is very testable. So you can use unit tests to test it, you can use integration tests to test it, but it's a good abstraction to use for quality.
It also separates the concerns, right? So your XAML is about putting the view, displaying the view, versus the view model, as you said, is all that business logic.
Right.
So it's easier to know where to find, well, where do I look to maintain one thing or the other?
Right. Now, as we mentioned before, there's some view-like logic, for example, the ability
scroll
to
position.
Store your scroll position. That's really something that I wouldn't expect the business logic to care about.
Right.
Scroll position if I were to navigate around. But everything else, I'd expect to live in the view model. So let me show you how to wire up a view model that will get associated with this view. If I go down to the app again, add a folder, I'll go and add a view models folder. And in this view models folder, I'll put in a view model called start page view model. So the same name as the view plus view model at the end. Okay? And what I'm going to do is make this public so we can find it. And then I'm going to go to my view and make the association in XAML. Now, Windows Store is a view-first type environment where you really navigate to views. So since this view is going to be instantiated by the framework, we need to have the view say, hey, I know I need to go and find my associated view model. So what we're going to use is the view model locator pattern, where here in the view, we're going to say, please locate my view model. And so luckily, our framework provides a view model locator class to help you with that. So if you set view model locator dot auto wire view model to true, exactly as you see there, it will go ahead and find a view model associated with this view. So if this is start page, it's going to look for a view model in the view models folder called start page view model.
So it's going to look in the view models folder?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In the view models folder, with that, it'll instantiate it and then set it into the data context of this view.
That's cool.
Okay. So just to make sure that we're actually connecting this view to a view model, let's go ahead and put a text box in here that will interact with it. Okay? So I'm going to put a stack panel around here. Put a text block in here. I'm going to bind this to a name property, or let's call it first name. Moit equal two ways so that the view model can change the value of the text box as well as having the text box value go back into the view model. Okay, so we've got this first name property here, and I'm going to put a first name property on the view model. So the view model will expose this first name property, and we'll see that it can interact with this view. Okay. make it a string property, call it first name. And just for ease of debugging, I'm going to go ahead and create a backing field for this. Okay, so now I can put a breakpoint on the setter and make sure it works. All right, I've got my start view. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put some data in the text box here. Hit tab. Sure enough, I hit the setter. So you can see that I've got a view model associated with my view very easily. This is all convention-based. Now, what that means, though, is that there's a very easy way to get started. If you follow the convention, if you put your views in the views folder, if you put your view models in the view models folder, mm-hmm. everything's great. Does that mean that you have to stay with that convention? No. You can configure the navigation service to look anywhere you want for your views. You can configure the view model locator to look anywhere you want for your view models. Mm-hmm. So that's completely overridable.
And that's in the documentation, we talk about how to do that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's very flexible. Right. So next thing I want to show you is how to configure this with a little bit more logic. For example, let's say if I want to use this page to launch a flyout. Flyouts are something that's very difficult to do. I'll show you how easy it is to do a flyout here. Mm-hmm. Right? All right. So to do a flyout, if you look in the samples, to do a flyout, it takes somewhere between 40 to 50 lines of code. What we're going to do is we're going to go into the Views folder. I'm going to add a blank page, and we'll call it Sign in flyout. Right? So this is the page that is going to show up as flyout. I can put whatever XAML I want in here. I'll just go and put a little text block here. Okay? Just to make sure that shows up. And I'm going to go and change the background to white. I'll change the text here to black. Now you may be wondering why I'm doing that. If you look at the guidelines, it actually is required that your flyouts be a white background or mm-hmm. a very light background. So you'd probably not hard code these colors right here, but that is part of the requirements. So we'll definitely show how that works when we show the flyout. Now, what we need to do is change the flyout to extend flyout view instead of page. Okay? And that requires the constructor to know about a specific flyout size.
Okay.
And luckily, there's two flyout sizes that are standard. So let's go ahead and use the standard sizes. So we provide a class that provides those two standard sizes. Let's go ahead and pick a narrow size, right? And so now we're almost done with that. Now we have to make sure our flyout XAML also derives from flyout view instead of page. And that's about it. Now all we need to do is hook up the ability to open up this flyout. Right. So far, the flyout creation isn't too terribly difficult. The next part is just using the flyout service to launch this flyout. What we're going to do is go back to the start page view model, and actually start page view. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a button here.
You can also launch it based on a validation or something like that if you needed to, right? Or
right.
Upon entry.
Right. You can also launch it based upon the settings charm also. That's very, right. very typical.
Okay.
And that's something that I can show you next also. But let me show you how to do it from a button on the page, because I'll also show how to use commands.
Okay.
Okay. So here, I'm just going to add a button. And the command property of a button expects an I command. That's how buttons work. So what we're going to do is we're going to bind it to something. We're going to call it a sign in command. And we're going to have to provide that as a property on our view model. Okay. Okay. So if you go to the view model, let's go ahead and create a sign in command. Right. And what we're going to do is we're going to add some business logic to that command. Now what we're going to do is we're going to create a constructor for this view model that takes in a flyout service. Okay. So I've got my backing field here. And what I'm going to do is say that my sign in command is equal to a new delegate command. So this is an implementation of iCommand that we provide in Prism. It's one of the things that we brought over from the Prism 4.0.
Okay.
And we've got a new delegate command, and it takes one or two delegates. In this case, we'll go and provide it the ability to open the flyout. So we're just going to use a flyout service here. I'm going to use a lambda expression. Say flyout service dot So I've got my flyout service.
What's the difference between that and underscore flyout service?
Nothing at this point.
All right.
Let's see if that works any better. Oh. Autocomplete is not firing very well. Let's see. What am I forgetting? Remember, Blaine? It's very strange.
I think I had the same thing. I forget what I had to do.
Tell you what, let me bring in the code for the flyout service instead of the NuGet reference. Then we can continue from there. Right, so I've got the actual source code. So now, what if flyout service? Oh, I must have created that accidentally. That's why. All right.
Ah, okay.
So now, Okay. So now let's go ahead and add the reference back in. Project. Okay. So we see that there now. Okay. Now we're referencing that file service. Great. Now we're back in action. There we go.
Okay.
So now we're going to show the flyout, and we're going to use a convention-based method again to show a flyout. So since we called it sign-in flyout, we're going to call this sign-in. So we want to show the sign-in flyout, right? Now, if we build this, you can see that this looks good, except we've got this constructor now that takes in a parameter. So this was what we would call a constructor injection. This class, the start page view model, has a dependency, mm-hmm. and we're showing that dependency as a constructor parameter. So something needs to provide that constructor parameter. This class does no longer have a default constructor, so we need to be able to provide that. So if we were to run this now, we'll get an exception that we can't create this type, which is the start page view model, because it doesn't have a default constructor. So we need to provide it. So we can provide a number of ways. We can explicitly tell this, hey, here is how to construct a start page view model, or we can use a container to do so. Mm-hmm. So let's see how we can use the Unity container in our Windows Store app to provide that constructor dependency. So let's go back up to the project. And luckily, Unity just shipped with their version 3 that supports Windows Store apps. So let's grab that NuGet package. And there it is right here. You can see you have version 3 that was just shipped.
That's another question I was going to ask. Can mm-hmm. you combine things like Prism with Unity? So
absolutely.
The answer is yes.
Absolutely.
And yet you don't have to.
You don't have
right,
to.
So if you right. don't want to use a container, you're not required to use a container. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was the explicit goal of the project.
Right.
Now, we tested this with Unity, but I imagine you could use this with any other types of containers. So now that we've got our reference to Unity, as we can see here, what we'll do in our app class, is create a field right mm-hmm. So I've got my container here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell my container that this thing called a flyout service is available. And when something needs a flyout service, go ahead and provide it. So what I'm going to do here in my app, you can see that I have an override of the on-launch application. There are a number of other overrides that we provide for you as entry points into your application. So we'll see here, if you go override, that there is an on... Actually, there's an override resolve type. So if we want to resolve a type, you can see here we're passing in a type and we need to pass back an object instead of the base that's provided in the MVVM app base, which is just using activate or create instance, we're going to use a container. So instead of base, we're going to call it container.resolve. That's it. It's all you need to do to hook up a container with the MVVM app base. Okay? One thing else we need to do though, in this case, we need to initialize our application. So you can see on initialize, there's another override you can use. What we're going to do is we're going to register into our container that flyout service. So our container.register instance, in this case, we have an instance already created as part of one of the properties of our MVVM app base. We're going to register the flyout service. Okay, mm-hmm. And that's it. So now the container knows about the flyout service. The view model will need a flyout service, and hopefully this will all get resolved. And by telling the app that we're going to use the container to resolve anything that needs to resolve, the view models will be handled appropriately. So let's give it a try.
And as Francis goes through this, just to give another plug back to the documentation, if you do not want to use any container, the documentation talks about what you need to do if you don't want to use a container.
Okay,
great. So our page came back. Mm-hmm. So our start page view model was constructed properly. Now let's see if our sign-in works. So if we hit the sign-in button, oh, look at that.
Great.
A flyout just came out in just, what, a few lines of code to actually call the flyout service, and now we see our sign-in.
Cool.
So you can see that with just a little bit of code, you can actually get an MVVM-style app on Windows Store up and running.
Cool.
Are you going to show, were you planning on showing anything about restorable state?
Oh, that's a great question. Thanks for bringing that up. Now, as you can see, we have a property on our view model called first name.
Right.
Now, what happens if we were to run our app, type some values in here, and go back into Visual Studio? I hit my breakpoint. Continue from there. If I go back into Visual Studio and then terminate my application, what do we expect?
We would expect to see what we typed. What we're going
to get
at this point, unless there's magic behind the scenes,
Not yet. Yes, that data magically did not appear, unfortunately. So let's make sure it does appear. So what we've provided is the ability to hook into that whole chain of events of suspending and what the suspension manager provided, which is now the session state service that provides that same functionality. All you have to do to plug into that is make sure your view models extend our base view model and that any properties that you want to have survive the termination be given the restorable state attribute. That's it. Let's give it a try again.
So could you mix and match the suspension manager with this state service in an app? Would they collide with each other?
They would probably collide with each other. Okay. What we've done is we've provided the session state service as a replacement for the suspension manager.
Right.
It really is the same code. It saves the state to the same file, so okay. you'd probably have some file contention issues.
Right. That's the reason they would collide with each other, because they're both trying to read the same file, or worse, write to the same file at the same time.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Got it.
So let's put some data in our text box here. Go back to our Visual Studio. Terminate the application. Run it again. And you can see our data is restored. You can put that attribute on any property as long as it's
serializable.
Right.
If it is not a primitive type, you have to tell it to, you have to train it. You have to provide the known types. But it's not too bad.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Any other questions?
So give us a sense of what more there is in here.
Oh, there's a lot more. One thing that we provided is validation. Data validation, that's something that we don't get a lot of in the platform that forms over data developers are going to expect. You're going to need to be able to do forms over data and validate the data both on the client side as on the server side. And so we provide some support for that. Take a look at the reference implementation for that. There's lots of features in there. Also, the ability to add items to the settings charm, very, very easy. From what we've done there, it's 2 more lines of code.
Okay.
Shall I show that or later?
The other thing is, as I mentioned earlier, we've added accessibility. So Francis and the dev team spent a lot of time in making the application accessible. So if you look in the reference implementation, you can see how to do that, whether it's a reader, whether it's high contrast. There's a number of things we did. Again, we also talk about how to do to localize your app to other languages.
Narrator support for that accessibility, very important.
Yep.
So we've done a lot of work on that. And so if you take a look at the AdventureWorks sample app, it's a really good example of how a testable, well-written app that's gone through all those checks should look like.
So
what you've showed so far is pretty straightforward, pretty easy to understand. Is that the general experience throughout? I guess my question is, how hard is it to, we just saw it's easy to get started, how hard is it to really kind of start mastering the capabilities of this?
You know, there's not too much more. There's okay. not too much more. What we've tried to do is make it really easy and as less error-prone as possible. For example, I mentioned in the MVVM app base, it replaces all the boilerplate code in the app. Mm-hmm. So any place we saw that we found ourselves making a lot of mistakes, we try to make it easier for the end developer so they wouldn't have to make those same mistakes. So in the restorable state, you know, a lot of those, in order to save your state, it can be very tricky. In order to save it at the right time, so
with,
you're not getting the right
integrate
collisions.
With navigation.
Right. So there's not too much more.
Okay.
I would just take a look at the app and see how we use the libraries. But
okay. Good docs for each of the features and
Absolutely.
How to use things. Do you provide guidance and patterns on how to construct view models and how to interact? Is that in there?
I don't think we have that much documentation on view models per se. I think the view model pattern is already
okay.
very well documented.
Okay.
I think we do have some references or pointers out to other documentation if you read our documentation.
Okay. Yeah. And so this is for XAML and C Sharp.
That's
is
correct.
It for VB?
No.
Okay. Is it for JavaScript?
No.
Will it be?
Yeah, so that's a good question. There actually has been a number of questions on JavaScript and are we going to do something for JavaScript? And you know we're going through the planning right now,
okay.
so I don't have an answer.
Okay,
but
phone?
You know in the next probably you know three, four, you know a couple months we'll have that. Phone is one that's been high on the list because a lot of people would like to be able to develop an app for both the phone and
right.
Windows Store.
Right.
So I would imagine that's going to be an area we're going to spend a fair amount of time
okay.
in the next 6 to 12 months.
And you'll put as much as possible into portable class libraries, so
right.
you only have to write it once, and then we only have to use it once.
I agree.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. I believe that the development experience between phone and Windows Store is merging very closely, so I think that we'll see a lot mm-hmm. of the things that we've learned here building this app will be very easily translatable to the Windows Phone experience.
Okay. So what's the best place as people are using this? Where can they go if they have questions? And is there a place where they can make suggestions for what they'd like to see in the future? Or, yep. And I guess a follow-up is, are there places where people are discussing various approaches? Like you do things one way, but I'm used to doing it yep. another way. How do I bridge that gap?
Great question. I'd like to point people out
to... Not to mention, where do you get this?
Right. Right now, our latest bits are on CodePlex.
Mm-hmm.
We will eventually deliver in a dev center...
On the code... Well, the bits will be on the code gallery.
Okay.
And then yep. all the documentation will be on the Windows Dev Center.
Okay.
But currently, our pre-release bits are currently on CodePlex. You can see that our site right here. You can also see our discussions. Any product enhancements you would like to make,
okay.
any bugs that you find, feel free to add them here and
mm-hmm.
we'll read them and we'll triage them as appropriate.
Cool. How many people did it take to write this? How long did it take?
So what did we have? We had 2 to 3 developers and we spent, 5 months?
About 5 months.
Mm-hmm. And remember, we were balancing both library code and the reference implementation.
Right.
So, we talked about there's a number of things that are just in the reference implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a number of those were how do you do some of the standard Windows Store things. I guess we didn't talk at all about tiles and
right.
live tiles.
Right.
So we demonstrate live tiles.
We have all that support in here already.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Oh, that is in there already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And Snap View and, right, which I demonstrated
right.
before.
Okay.
Right. I think mostly... Most of that logic or the recommendations is in the documentation. I'm not sure how much support we have in the library for that,
right.
but if you look in the reference implementation, we definitely show you how to do the snap view,
mm-hmm.
secondary tiles, how to do search, and so forth.
Yep.
Now, I know that Brian Noyes was one of the folks who was writing it.
Yes.
Right. So shout out to him. Hi, Brian.
Brian
I know that...
Yeah, Brian's been with us since Prism 1,
right.
Back in 2008. So he's
been great help.
Yep. That he's been writing some public tutorials, I think on the Silverlight Show site, if I'm not mistaken, or Silverlight TV, what's that?
On Pluralsight also?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's also doing a Pluralsight.
He's doing a course on this?
Yep,
okay.
As well.
Right. So does the documentation also have kind of a getting started walkthrough as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, so we can look at that. We can also look at the stuff that Brian's doing.
And all the documentation right now is on the CodePlex site. Francis, just go to the download. It's all in Word format. Now go to the downloads. Where is it? Documentation, there you go. So okay. The documentation is here. Again, it's mm-hmm. in Word format. It's in one big doc right now. Again, right. that'll be on the Dev Center. We're going to have a PDF version that you can download. You know, so it'll be easier. But for now, okay. if you want to get started today, you can with the documentation,
cool.
the code, and mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty much exactly what's going to come out for real.
Right.
It's just it'll be in easier format to consume on the Dev Center.
And then obviously right. because it's just essentially code. Somebody writes an app using this, publishes it to the Windows Store. It'll pass the WAC. Right, it's just the certification.
There's a lot to getting an app through the certification, mm-hmm. but for what we provided in terms of maintainability and testability, hopefully we'll help with that. There's right. a lot of design guidelines that you have to meet.
Right, yeah. But there's nothing in this code that would violate any constraints in terms of
Absolutely not. We have gone right. through certification with this app.
Right, excellent.
Yep.
Cool.
And I'd like to also show you here that as well as the documentation, we have our latest drop as of April 24th.
Okay.
So this will include both the reference implementation, the Adventure Workshopper app that we showed you, as well as all of our reusable libraries, the Event Aggregator PubSub library, mm-hmm. as well as the Store Apps library.
And then there's, so you said that this is the next to the last version? There'll be one, the next version is?
The next version will be the final.
Okay. And do you expect things to change between the current version and that version?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
We're basically right now waiting to get in the pipeline to get the documentation published.
Right.
And doing final testing. So our test team may come up, find something.
Right.
In final regression, but it's not likely. But it's possible.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'd also like to point people out to my blog. I've put a series of blog posts out there, really walking through what you've seen today, as
excellent.
Well as more.
Okay.
And Brian's, yeah. there's a link to Brian's as well out there, so that both places are good sources to go.
Oh, there we
right.
go. Good.
There's Brian's blog.
Yeah, right
the
there.
URL. There it was.
That's when you're talking about the getting started with Prism for Windows Runtime.
Okay. Awesome. This is great.
Yeah, I think this will really help developers get started. I think we found that this library not only helps you with maintainability and testability, but it's a really easy way to get started writing apps for Windows Store.
Yeah,
for example, the flyout service. There's a lot of things we found to be a little cumbersome that we've made really easy. So hopefully it'll help.
It seems to make it a lot easier to use the dependency injection as well. Because instead of having to master what it is and understand all the ins and outs, you just call a line of code. That's cool.
It should be pretty easy.
A lot of stuff like that. Excellent.
All right.
All right, so if you are writing XAML Windows Store apps, you should definitely check this out. I know I'm going to. I'm going to take some of the samples that I've done before with my kind of lightweight version of MVVM and rewrite them using this. And if you don't hear from me, it means that I was successful. When I stumble, I know who to talk to.
Absolutely.
So you guys should definitely check this out, and hope you enjoyed that. We'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.